I know this is a very tough thing to talk about, but it's been 18 years, but can you kind of tell us your thoughts now after 18 years?
It's still just as difficult as it was that day for me because of the memories and the panic and the fear. And you know, today, this morning is just like that morning for me. You know, it was a nice morning. It was, I got the kids up for school and I'd gotten them off and I came back and was watching Good Morning America. I had just come back from Minnesota. I'd done a Masonic temple up there and the football player had died from internal heat exhaustion. So I was doing laundry when not really watching TV, but listening to it, and the first plane had hit. And in the back of my mind, I knew I was already going.
Right.
And I was thinking, you know, because I had been there before when they tried bombing the towers from underneath, that you just don't not see the towers, even if you're in a plane. And that's what they were thinking at first, is that the plane just ran into and they didn't see it. But you just don't not see it.
Right.
So I kind of, you know, just kind of froze and was watching. And then the second tower hit, and then the Pentagon, and then my phone rang, and it was, I worked for Blackburn Moorings Thematic Catastrophe and Disaster Relief, and it was my dispatch telling me that I was on standby, that I was leaving for New York.
Right. Now, when you got to New York, what was your job there? What did you have to do?
My job there, it was chaotic when we got there. You know, I left out of West Memphis, first plane in the air after the flight ban was lifted, and it was chaotic coming into the airport. You know, people running everywhere and signs everywhere, and you know, holding up my company signs. I stayed at the Roosevelt Hotel where we had meetings, and my position was, I was a supervisor, so I had to direct crews and cleaning, and of course, you know, we had to go through security. We were subject to cavity searches, and this was daily. Anytime they wanted, they could pull you and do cavity search for security, you know. And I remember I didn't go right directly into Ground Zero the first day. We had to set up with the Red Cross and I'm lost for words for what I'm trying to say. We had to make a safe place for the police, firemen, crews, you know, with the Red Cross. But then it was the 15th. I left on the 14th. On the 15th, I went directly into Ground Zero. The towers weren't actually fully collapsed at that point. They had fallen, but the shells were still standing. And I remember my ride. We took the subway from Grand Central into Ground Zero, and part of the subway had collapsed, and the heat was so extensive. I mean, it was just underground. It was worse. But I remember the ride and how quiet and it was, and considering what was going on, and the smell hit me. I can't ever describe the smell, but jet fuels were the hottest burning fuel that there is. And it was the smell of jet fuel, and like when you try to put out a campfire and, you know, burning bodies, and I started vomiting. And my superintendent asked me if I was going to be okay, and I said yes. And he said, because when you get out, it's going to intensify by 1,000.
Oh.
And I remember, there's pieces I don't remember, but I remember getting off the subway and walking with my crew, and I remember the fencing and the barbed wire, and I remember the little kids crying, and I remember the hands, the fingers. Through the chain link fences, and I remember the hollow cries.
Right.
And I remember walking over all those rubbish, and I remember the ash, and I remember the shoes. The shoes were everywhere, and of course, you know, they were kicking off their shoes to run faster.
Right. Wow. Just a horrific event. And I'm truly sorry that you had to go through that. And all the people that had to go through that. It's just a date that we will never forget as Americans. God bless you for what you did and trying to help out with the cleanup there. And I hope things get better for you. I know it's something you're always going to remember.
Yeah, it's just a flood for me this time of year. You know, it's something I don't regret. I'll never regret.
Right.
But it's hard to remember. It's hard. So much devastation and travesty and hurt, you know. I had a lady who, her name was Maria, and she was Colombian. She was probably in her late 60s, and she didn't speak English very well, so I had a translator who worked with me, and I remember walking in the American Express building, which I believe it's just north of Trade Tower 1. It was right next to it, and it had the side of it was partially blown out, and I was checking my cruise, and I had come into this room, and ash 6 inches high, sitting on ashtrays with half-burnt cigarettes and half-eaten donuts, half cups of coffee. You know, it's like life just stood still. And I was checking my cruise, and here's this woman, this elderly woman in her dress and her scarf over her head, and she's clung to a window. You know, their windows are probably 16 to 20 feet wide and just as high, and she was sliding down the window, and I went to her, and she was crying uncontrollably, and I was trying to explain to her, she'd go home, it was okay, you know, I understood, you know, that this was hard, and she didn't have to be there, and she wasn't going to lose her job, and she was just rattling to me, and I couldn't understand what she was saying, and Luce, which was my translator, was trying to explain to me, and this woman is sitting on her legs, half back behind her, and she's pleading with me, holding my hand. And Luce said, she's begging you not to send her home because her daughter was in Trade Tower 1 and this is all she could do to find her.
I appreciate you sharing this story with us.
I appreciate you wanting me to talk about it. It helped me to talk about it.
Okay, thank you, Dodie. Again, God bless you for everything that you did there in New York on the days after 9/11.